Talk Live. Yes, it is Free Talk Live. That's right, freetalklive.com. If you have never heard of our program, or you are otherwise unfamiliar with the things we do and say here on this particular program, we're here every weekend from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., and we're also here on Wednesdays and Thursdays, same hour, 7 to 10 p.m. If you would like to call and voice your opinion, you can voice your opinion on what we're talking about. That's fine. Or you can change the subject and talk about whatever's on your mind. We don't care.
Anything?
Anything.
Anything. Right?
The only rules that we have are, like, you get one call a day. Mm-hmm. And also no cussing. Mm-hmm. Right? Nothing the FCC would, like, you know, get us in trouble for. Right? Like, yeah. we like our affiliates. We like our radio stations that broadcast us. So, like, we're going to play by the rules of the government in that respect. Outside of that, nothing is taboo. The telephone number, 603-283-6160. Again, 603-283-6160. In the studio tonight, it's myself, the Reverend Captain Kickass. Joining me,
Peakless Mountaineer. And joining us remotely,
from Florida, Mark Edge. You know, I'm thinking about this idea that you can't cuss on the radio. And look, I'm not trying to cuss on Free Talk Live.
Sure, well, as you know, we are in favor of it. We love the FCC, and we want their boot pressed firmer against everyone's throat.
What I was thinking was, how many kids are listening to radio right
All
now?
Of them. All of them. Every single kids? One of
Wait,
them.
If you're it depends on your definition of kids. Mark, you and I are both Gen X. So, like, to me, a kid could be anyone, like, 40 or under.
Sure. I'm thinking of somebody 12 and under.
All right.
Somebody who, if they heard a cuss word, would be surprised. Maybe, right? Like, there's little old ladies out there that would hear the cuss word.
Yeah.
And they may be upset about hearing it, but let's be clear, they've heard the word before.
Well, I don't think that's the purpose of the, you know, I'm going to play devil's advocate on this.
Okay,
you know, I'm going to steel man the opposition
sure.
on this.
Okay.
Now, I don't think that they're trying to, they're like, oh no, if no one ever says the F word, then no one will ever learn it and we will live in a better society. No, I don't think that's the plan. I don't think that they're trying to protect 12-year-olds that would be surprised. I think that what they're trying to do is, so when you cuss, it activates the center of the brain, the, like, reptilian complex, the part of your brain that goes, do I need to punch something or run away? And I think what they're trying to do, in the same way as, like, okay, they don't want a certain level of sexuality on billboards, is to protect people who are not agreeing to it and not ready for it from having the most powerful
levels
activated.
That is such a preposterous, like, supposed position for government to take. Thank you, devil, and your advocation. The fact of the matter is, multiple studies have been done, and the truth is out there, as the X-Files liked to say back in the day, that cussing has never caused any harm to any person or property outside of a little emotional butthurt.
Well, and it's the emotional butthurt.
Well, right.
That's
but,
what
for,
it is.
But,
well, and that's,
but
and
seriously,
that's actually, so
like,
weirdly
like
enough,
if I insult your mother, I can do a better job doing that with an eloquent insult than I ever could with cuss words.
Well, so here's the thing. This is the same thing as all of the woke diversity, equity, inclusion nonsense. It's the same thing on the other side of the aisle. It's that same social control. I have a right not to have my feelings hurt. It's just a different aesthetic that's being applied.
There's this social illusion, and that's the only thing I can refer to it as. And it's kind of the same social illusion that has people believing that government is necessary, right? But there's this social illusion that if you're around children and you say the F word, that, like, somebody is going to be like, hey, there's children around here.
Yeah.
And they're going to look at you, like, with, you know, the look of scorn, raise an eyebrow at you or whatever, because you said the F word in front of some children. But the reality is that
none of these children have ever been harmed by another human being going, you know, I don't know what the FCC is going on around here.
Well, the point is that, I mean, children will always get brought up when you talk about cussing. And the point I'm trying to make is that kids are on TikTok and they're hearing cuss words and they're seeing big old gelatinous breasts bounce around, and they're doing everything that we cannot do here on the radio.
Right. Yeah.
We have no breasts to bounce around on this particular show.
Let alone gelatinous ones.
Right.
I'm all for all of them.
welcome all of them. But I mean, it's just so silly. I mean, who are we protecting at this point? I just don't know. You're right. We're protecting delicate Republican snowflakes.
Well, mm-hmm. And like it is really the passing of the guard at this point. Right. Because it used to be mainstream for people to like be on board with the no cussing thing and like the, you know, super conservative, you know, look and feel of, well, all media. Like I'm old enough to recall as a child somewhere between, I don't know, 4 and 8 years old. Right. I recall seeing a Playtex Cross Your Heart Bra commercial on television. And my grandparents were like upset. Mm. Right. At least my grandmother was. She's like, I can't believe they're showing such filth
and
on television
daylight.
Like during like the soap opera she was trying
really?
To watch. Yeah. No, seriously. Like I'm not even kidding you.
How
like,
dare they show you a woman's body in between stories about what they do with them?
There was a time that since I've been alive where like that was frowned upon, showing a woman wearing a bra in a commercial for bras. Was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe, like, it was just a, you know, an abhorrence or a, you know, I don't know, like, they probably thought it was a smite against God or something, right? Because of the religious aspect of where my grandparents were. So, like, but now, you're right, Mark, like, the flippening has happened. And by the flippening, I mean with media, right? Used to be television and radio were the
Well, they actually call it
media.
The cross, just so you know.
The cross?
Who
the
calls cross. It that?
Time spent listening crossed for podcast crossed that of radio.
So oh, now, I thought it was just some religious people talking about the flippening of media.
To be fair, I've only ever heard the flippening in reference to one of these days, Ethereum will be more powerful than Bitcoin.
No, that's not true. You and I have talked about the flippening of telephony. And that's the transition of telephones going from old copper hardwire to now it's all digital. Right. That has been the inversion, if you will. And so media has gone through a similar inversion to telephones. Mm-hmm. Telephones are now all digital. Even your copper landline that your house that you had installed in 1974 or whatever it was, like by the time that hits the colo, that is the you remember the old picture of the lady plugging cables into the phone board to direct mm-hmm. your call? That's all done by computers now. So by the time it reaches the computer,
where you would like pick up a phone and tell them address,
right?
And they would be like, one moment, sir.
Right. So that's all done by computers now.
For the record, that was a way better system.
Well, okay, it was better customer service for sure. But like that's all done by computers now. It's all in the digital realm. Like your analog call might run down the copper line on your old actual physical analog dial telephone, right? But by the time it hits the colo, it's transformed into digital and it's sent across VoIP lines and digital lines, fiber optic cable, all that kind of stuff. And even if somebody on the other end has a landline, it retransfers that back into the analog domain to deliver yep. it to that particular call. So what I'm saying is media has experienced the same inversion. And what Mark's saying, or at least what I think Mark is trying to say, is that radio and television are no longer the dominant media. Now the internet is the dominant media. All of the video, all of the TikTok, the Twitter, the Facebook, all that crap, right? YouTube, Vimeo, et cetera, and so on, Odyssey, right? All the places that we
Netflix.
Know and love. Netflix, mm-hmm. right? All of the subscription-based places, the CBS, whatever the heck that is that right. they're doing. All
you
these-
only have to go back 10 years. 10 years ago,
yeah,
the radio, the television stations were relevant.
Right.
And I don't think, and I think radio was relevant up until 2019. I think there's still a lot of people who listen to radio.
Right about the time I got here.
Yeah, I thought it was funny that, because we would joke about, like, how many cable stations there are. It's like, you know, because I'm old enough, we didn't have cable at one point.
Yeah.
Then we had cable, and there's all these stations.
My parents refused to get cable, and then I move out.
Yeah.
And the first thing they do is get cable.
Get cable.
and then the cable companies start actually a little bit competing with each other.
Yeah.
So it's like now there's hundreds of channels.
Yeah.
And then thousands of channels. Yeah. And, you know, we joke about where this is going. And no, it actually went to infinity. There are currently infinity channels. It's just that they're not being brought to you the same way.
Yeah. So Mark is absolutely correct when he points out that, like, this whole, like, thing about, like, don't cuss on the radio and the television is so antique and irrelevant now in media today, because broadcast media, OTA, over the air broadcast media, is no longer the major media that people consume. They consume it all online now. So regular television, even cable television, regular broadcast radio, it's all like, you know, the ancient stepsons. We're the antiques in the corner, right? We're the old 1969 VW Beetle in the garage that Dad's never taken out because he's not done building it up yet or whatever, right? That's what radio and television are, sadly, in today's media environment.
Yeah,
it's true. I mean, who's getting their television over a set of rabbit ears? I know that it's still possible. They changed everything, but you can still get broadcast radio.
Yeah.
You had to send away for some new antenna or whatever. Not like the old antenna that we used to have where you had to stand on one foot while holding the rabbit ear in your teeth.
Yes.
but it's, you know, you can still do it. I can't imagine who outside of Alaska is attempting such a thing.
Probably some, like, folks in remote areas of Montana.
God bless them.
Oklahoma, maybe. Northern Wisconsin, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, perhaps. I don't know.
Well, and those are some remote places. Don't forget Maine. They're pretty remote out there, too.
Yeah.
And the thing about protecting children Roostick. From this is it's just so lazy. Like, what you actually need to do is to raise them and educate them and help them to learn how to use these words correctly. Because, yeah, they're very powerful, and they do instill very powerful emotions in people sometimes. You know, tell them F you and watch, you know, their face turn red.
Yeah.
Like, when you actually train them to be more powerful beings, to be more capable and effective, so that they're not just firing these off just because they feel it, but they're actually choosing when to use these words. That is way more difficult than just telling you not to say that word in front of my kid.
Right.
Right. I mean, your child is, in my opinion, more susceptible to being bullied if they don't understand these words.
Little mini mountaineer, in case you're wondering.
Just whomever it is out there, the child of the age that bullying, that cyberbullying occurs, you're more likely to experience bullying if you've never seen or heard these words used because you don't have any understanding.
I think it's hilarious. A person
can be eviscerated far better without using cuss words than with using them.
Oh, yeah.
And people need to know that.
Oh, Mark, I think it's just awesome that we're talking about, you know, words and vernacular and that kind of thing. I think it's also awesome that you talk about cyberbullying because I, and you too, Mark, and Pickles, you're what, 40?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. So we're all, you know, men of middle age, let's call it, right? I have played video games where, like, you can talk to whoever you're challenging, mm-hmm. you know, over the internet, over the game, right? And, like, I have played
FCC
against...
FCC rules apply there, right?
No, they don't.
No one says cuss words over those
they
radio
totally
wires.
But I have been cyberbullied by somebody who I can only imagine is, like, 13 years old.
Fact.
Repeatedly, right? Like, not just one time. Oh, you just play this one game against this one a-hole teenager who is being a dick or whatever. Like, no. It happens on the regular
mm-hmm.
when you get on these online games. So, like, cyberbullying isn't just about, like, older people bullying younger people. It can go the other way. I'm just saying ageism doesn't exist in cyberbullying.
Yeah, currently my 16-year-old is cyberbullying each other within a group of friends. They're in there doing it to each other. You know, they're saying all kinds of things as they work their way through a map of some sort, and you know, they're having a fine time. Whether it's a good idea for kids to play video games, I don't know. But nonetheless, they seem to be bound and determined to do it.
I mean, I don't find a problem with kids playing games of any variety. Like, some people would have you think that it's far better for your children to be playing Monopoly, the board game, than it is for them to be playing Call of Duty, the video game, right? And, like, I mean, maybe those are two different games, but, like, if there's a online version of Monopoly that you can play with a group of people, why wouldn't you? Like, oh, you mean I can play with, you know, some guy in China and another guy in Afghanistan and guy in Uruguay.
And it's a lot easier when you don't have to deal out the money and play with the hotels and all that stuff. It's a lot easier to play the game.
Well, and I'm just saying,
I don't know, man. There's no bribing the banker that way, you know.
How about
risk? It's hard to make secret alliances against people.
No, you want to play Axis and Allies is what you want to play if you want to get that. You know,
somebody needs to teach me. I have the boxed set here and don't know how to play.
You don't know how to play Axis and Allies?
I don't.
Okay, well, the next time you're here for more than a couple of days in a row, we'll play. Because it takes that long to play this game. Like, you don't just start a game of Axis and Allies and you're done in like an hour and a half, 2 hours. No.
Yeah, that was my thought when you're like, why wouldn't you play Monopoly with these people from around the world? It's like, are you kidding me?
Well,
like, the investment of time and energy, that's like a family level of investment in relationship.
If you're familiar with the investment level to play Monopoly as far as time, Axis and Allies requires at least double that.
At least,
if not four times that.
Yeah.
So it's more of an intergenerational game then.
I don't know. It's at least
Hatfields have been playing this game of Axis and Allies against the McCoys.
And I used to play way back in the day, like once a week for, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours. But like it was one game. Right. So we'd started the game. We'd play for, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours, whatever it was. And we'd leave the game where it was. And then we'd come back a week later. The game would still be where it was. And we would continue same game.
Wow.
Right. You know, after that for another 4 or 5 hours. And then like, oh, no, it's still not done. We'll wait till the next week and we'll come back. Right. So it was just like, I don't know. It was like watching the zombie TV show that's popular?
Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead. Yeah, it's just like, oh, to be continued next week.
They did such a terrible job with
that. We would come back the next week, and we'd be like, previously on Axis and Allies, you know, Bob over here became the Germans, and so, of course, he took on two fronts simultaneously, or whatever, right? You know, we'd recap whatever the hell happened, you know, recap who's got what as far as, you know, all of the munitions and the plants to build bombs and all that kind of stuff, because that's what you're really
there's only one game that I have, well, one kind of game, rather, that I've ever had that kind of patience for, and it's role-playing games. And that like interactive
storytelling.
It goes
on much longer than that.
Yeah,
role-playing games can go on months, years.
And that is worth it for me just because there's an open-endedness to it and a creative possibility that doesn't exist when, like, you know, there's a set of rules on the back of the board.
Again, I'm super glad.
When I was young, you know, obviously I played Dungeons & Dragons, enjoyed it very much, but I was into it back when, you know, I was like 11 or 12, and I bought the books and everything. And, of course, when I was 11 or 12, I had 11 or 12-year-old friends. And they're not so good at being dungeon masters. Everybody wants to be a fighter. Not everybody wants to be a dungeon master. So what we kind of did with each other was we'd get out the monster manual and, you know, roll a dice for the page and then, you know, just kind of pick a random monster off the page that we, you know, chose and then have the other person fight it. And then we go back and forth and, you know, we kind of did it that way. It was a really lame version of Dungeons and Dragons, but we enjoyed it.
And this is what we did when there were no video games.
Right, indeed. Oh, what else would we do?
So I'm really glad that you brought up vernacular, if you will, or nomenclature, which is a synonym for vernacular.
Nomenclature.
I love both of those words because, well, they're multisyllabic and they mean words. Mm. Right? Literally, nomenclature just means words, vernacular just means words. They're slightly different in that one is about like specific like a trade, for example. Like if you're a welder, you need to know what MIG and TIG are, right? That's metal inert gas and tungsten inert gas, right? They're two
kind of hard not to get trained in those if you haven't, you know, figured out what they are,
right? Yeah, and so when you go into any you know, sort of specific niche, whether it's a market, whether it's a skill set you're trying to acquire, there's terminology that you need to learn.
And the weird thing that I found about academia in general is almost every single subject is primarily vocabulary. Like, once you have learned the vocabulary of that thing, you have learned 90% of that field.
Yeah, I'm glad you point that out, because the people that have a hard time understanding cryptocurrency, for example, they don't, it, like, so many people are like, I just don't understand. It's like, okay, you do, you just don't, you haven't taken up the vernacular.
In fact, talked to a lady today. I was at a farmer's market, and the lady's like, I'd like to understand crypto. And I'm like, well, first, I'd like to posit, you know, that you don't need to understand crypto. And I would go so far, and don't take this as an insult, to say that you don't understand money.
Right.
That you don't know how this stuff is brought into existence. You don't know what it's backed by. You don't know how the banking systems work. You don't know foreign international banking laws. And that to know how to use crypto, really all you have to do is have an app and know how to scan a QR code.
Yeah. Yeah. That's about it, too.
That's what it comes down to, is knowing how to use crypto. Well, and then anything more. And then we had, of course, a conversation about how banks bring money into existence.
I mean, there is a little bit more to it than that. I mean, so one thing that definitely throws people is the whole, like, self-custodying wallets.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That seems to be, like, really big speed bump for a lot of people on this.
Agree with you, but, I mean, let's face it. Most people who have crypto are not self-custodying their wallets. They should.
Yeah.
And we will talk about what that is, and I'm going to have you do it, Peakless.
All right.
But to be quite honest, most people are using crypto in so much as they're buying it for an investment and they possess it and things like that, as opposed to using it day to day like we do in New Hampshire.
Well, so again, I'm glad we're talking about vernacular, because coming up, I want to talk about some vernacular that is going around and being created that is not beneficial to you. Excuseflation. Immaculate disinflation, greedflation, drip pricing. What are these terms and what do they mean? Coming up on Free Talk Live, 603-283-6160.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project, and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp, is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com.
Yes, it is Free Talk Live. We're a live call-in radio talk show where you, that's right, you, listener, can take control, talk about whatever is on your mind. The telephone number you need is 603-283-6160. Again, 603-283-6160. In the studio tonight, it's myself, the captain.
And Peakless Mountaineer, and joining us remotely from Florida, No one, apparently. Mark? Are you censoring co-hosts again?
No, he's unmuted.
Huh.
I heard him clicking. Come on, Mark.
We can only stall for so long.
We can hear you.
All right.
We hear clicking.
We will be joined by Mark Edge when he gets here.
Whenever he frickin' feels like it, apparently.
I mean, founds a show and thinks he could just do this all the time.
What, does he think this is the long break at the top of the hour?
He might.
That's what happened. I was chatting, trying to get some help with getting my cam set up here, and...
Worry about that after the
now
show.
Now I look
Mark.
Like a fool.
Yes.
Well, no, you like to work actually.
To be fair, you do not
sound like a fool.
Yeah, you don't. It's impossible to look like a fool if no camera is activated.
I almost spit my beverage out, and you wouldn't.
That's
you
a novel
to
way
it.
To fix your camera, Mark.
If only the camera were working when that happened, we might have had an entertaining tidbit for like the person who's like doing the. Right.
Oh man! Good
TikTok
thing the camera
clips.
Wasn't working when it didn't work.
Yeah. All right, but it is Free Talk Live. It's Captain Peakless and Mark. The telephone number is 603-283-6160. Before we start on this bit about vernacular, right, or nomenclature, or terminology, these are all synonyms for
lexicon.
Words. Lexicon, right. I just want to tell everybody that Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. In addition to being one of the world's first cryptocurrencies, Dash was the first crypto project with a decentralized, autonomous organization that to this day continues to improve and promote Dash. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and easy to use Dash. You can learn more at Dash.org. That's Dash.org. If some of you who are listening are regular listeners and you have a pretty good idea what the captain sounds like. You're like, the captain sounds a little different tonight for some reason. It's because I bit my tongue.
Mm. Ouch.
Yeah. No, like yesterday at some point, I don't know, during dinner or something happened and I clamped down when I shouldn't have. And so now I have this like owie on the left side of my tongue and it's causing me to, like I can still speak, but like I have to, instead of making my more S, they're a little more shh. They're a little more Sean Connery than they need to be, right? It's just subtle differences, but...
Your sibilance sibilance.
I'm slowing my rate of speech a bit, and I'm also being far more deliberate in my enunciation.
Wonder how long it'll take us to get to the point where AIs can do this. It's like, okay, I want it to sound like Captain, but if he bit his tongue on the left side...
It'd probably take about 5 minutes, really, for that to occur. So... At any rate, before we go on, because I have this bit about, what are the new terms for certain things, specifically economic things, because governments and media are always inventing these new terms or phrases for things that they're not really what they're calling them, right? Like, you know, the old libertarian taxation is theft. Well, okay, technically taxation is extortion. Right, but like,
and I consider extortion a kind of theft.
Yes,
but yeah,
right. So, but like, you get the idea. Like, the U.S. military says,
or it's not mass murder; it's war. War is good.
Or the U.S. military, my favorite. Instead of we're not engaging in wartime activities; we're merely engaging in kinetic military action.
Mm.
And it's like, oh, you mean warlike activities? And they're like, yeah, basically.
Well, it's a police action. It's not a Vietnam War. Sorry, Mark.
You're right.
No, we didn't declare it.
Yeah, there was no declaration. So,
we haven't declared a war since World War II. So, you know.
1942.
Yeah. Right. Vietnam, Korea, Iraq, Afghanistan. I mean, I lose track, honestly.
We had a caller I was going to put on, but somebody sprayed a can of Caller Be Gone. So... I don't know if it's the new and improved version or if they used the old can that was down in the basement of Caller Be Gone. But we'll move on with this story specifically of vernacular. This is from Mises.org. You guys are both familiar with Mises Institute, I'm sure. The headline, price inflation comes from government, not from excuseflation or greedflation. Now, these are two words that I had never heard until reading the headline of this article. But
why, that sounds like malinformation, Captain.
Information that's from Mal?
It's my favorite new word that, what you said is true, but it goes against our narrative. And that means you're being deceitful with your truth, unlike us.
Deceitful with your truth.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, malinformation. But yeah, what you're saying is true, but we don't like it.
Followers of the Austrian School of Economics know that the term inflation refers to the increasing of the quantity of money or money substitutes, the result being a rise in the price of goods and services or a fall in the value of money. But in the modern era, the rise in prices is called inflation. And as Ludwig von Mises wrote, this semantic innovation is by no means harmless. The semantic change has people looking everywhere but where they should to blame for higher prices. Now, if you're more than if you're more than 15 years old, you've probably noticed things have gotten more expensive dollar for dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It used to cost you $1.25 to get yourself a Coca-Cola in the old machine, or now it's $2.50.
We used to have dollar stores that were dollar stores.
Right.
Like now they're $1.25 stores that are slowly but surely shifting to, well, they're just low price stores.
Yeah, they're going to be $5 stores.
$5 stores.
It has a $5 aisle already.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the future.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. That $5 aisle is just going to expand slowly but surely.
Don't call me Shirley. Bloomberg's Edna Curran writes, a prolonged period of elevated inflation has left consumers cranky and eager to cast blame. Of course, when prices of whatever the stuff it is you buy on a daily basis go up, you get cranky. Huh, who would have figured? With the term inflation evidently getting tiresome, Curran lists some new price increase buzzwords and phrases.
Ooh.
Yes, that's right. We're going to learn about these words tonight.
Because if we just have different ways of describing the way that we're getting screwed, it'll be less bad.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. I'm taking off my sweater and my slippers, and we're going to learn us some vernacular.
Right, and this is what it all comes down to, is that those that love more government, constantly are using words in a way to describe things differently than they have been described in the past.
Or than they actually are.
Mm-hmm.
They'll go so far as to say that using the terminology that you used in the past is hateful or racist or exclusionary or whatever term that they'll use.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what happened to inflation long before any of this other stuff.
Yeah, right. Well, and weirdly enough, this is actually quite similar to the whole, like, using money, right? So you have no idea what the back of your monetary system looks like at all, but you know how to use it. You can swipe your card and bam, I've got my gas.
Or pull out some greenbacks out of your wallet or whatever.
Right, yeah. Right. In the same way, people don't care about language except, you know, weirdos like us. So when we come across a word like inflation, like we have a mental image. We're like, okay, a balloon blows up. Okay, what is getting inflated?
Right.
So when we come across a word, we're like, well, wait a second. This has got to work with my other use of this word. Like, what's getting inflated? Whereas normal people who are not interested in language, they just use it the way it is used around them. And weirdly enough, so inflation only applies to prices, and deflation only applies to property values.
Yeah, that is weird. And also, folks who are longtime listeners know that I, Captain Kickass, am a fan of a particular variety of word, and that is the portmanteau. That is when you take one word and another word and combine it together to make a new and more efficient version of both words together. I'll give you the best example I could possibly give you, and that is technical difficulties is now technicalties.
It's been quite a love affair.
And that's, you know, and I have more of those, but that's my favorite one. So most of these, or at least, a good percentage of them, there's only like a half a dozen here. Are also portmanteaus. The one we all know already, shrinkflation. This is President's favorite, apparently, according to the author. He even mentioned it in the State of the Union speech. The White House posted on Twitter, President Biden is calling on companies to put a stop to shrinkflation. In other words, put more cookies back in the bag or make Snickers bars the same size they used to be. Even Sesame Street Cookie Monster has complained his cookies were getting smaller. Like, that's their justification for this word, is Cookie Monster.
Well, gee, maybe, just maybe, this $7.3 trillion spending you're trying to pass has something to do with your shrinking cookie box.
Yeah, well, so for those who don't know, and I'd be surprised if you don't, but shrinkflation is just when you used to buy cookies, right? A bag of, right. I don't know, Chips Ahoy, right?
I think the best one is ice cream.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I mean, you know, when somebody tells you to go to the store and get a gallon of ice cream, you know what you're grabbing. But you grab that thing, and if you looked at it, it isn't a gallon anymore.
Yeah, it's like a half gallon.
Right. Right. So whatever it is, it's some smaller amount of volume than a gallon.
Right. I used to be able to go and buy, a pound of pepperoni slices, Hormel, if you will, right? Just to throw a name out there that I don't actually ever buy, but like they're popular. But now that same bag is, instead of 16 ounces, it's 7 ounces.
And I'm assuming that with ice cream, the pints aren't pints anymore.
Right.
A little like single serving-esque ones that you get.
Or whatever. Yeah.
At some point, the recommended serving out of these containers is going to be what you're actually buying.
Captain, that will never happen.
Shrinkflation. All right, so we got shrinkflation. I think we all know what that is. Drip pricing. I've never heard this term before until I read this article.
Nora?
No idea what it is. Mark, any clues?
Drip pricing?
Yeah.
No.
These are fees which are added for your luggage when you fly, or resort fees added on to your hotel bill. Processing and service fees were called junk fees by President Biden last year in the State of the Union speech. And he vowed to fight, quote, those hidden surcharges too many companies use to make you pay more, as if the hotel clerk puts a gun to your head at checkout time.
So I thought we already had a word that usually describes this, fees.
Yeah.
And a more specific word, hidden fees, or phrase rather.
Very well, yes.
Yeah, hidden fees. So dripflation actually takes longer to say than fees.
Drip pricing is the term they're using here. And it is exactly all of that. Now, what's funny about this is...
Like the phrase, nickel and dime me. Because it would be like a little $5 fee here, a $10 fee there.
What's funny about this is the President Biden vowed to fight those hidden surcharges used to make you pay more. Oh, you mean like tax? He's not fighting against that for anybody,
no,
right?
Well, sure not.
He's not bringing that up as a thing on his campaign trail. Like, no, he actually wants you to pay more in tax. And so in order to get you to do so, he's going to go on this campaign against quote-unquote drip pricing.
Right. Well, it's even more duplicitous than that. It's not like Joe Biden, this politician for 40 years or more, doesn't know how inflation works and doesn't know that when the government prints more money, or at least the government demands more money be printed,
yeah,
that prices don't go up.
Right.
I mean, he may not know how money is created or what it's backed by. It took me a long time and a lot of reading to sort of figure it out, and I probably am still not so good that I am the world's best teacher at it. But nonetheless, Joe Biden knows make more money, price go up.
Yep.
Because if you're taking a given community and that community has $1 million to circulate within it, then you decide, well, let's give that community $10 million worth of money to circulate within it. You didn't increase wealth. Wealth is cars and houses and machines that make good stuff.
Oh, Mark, you just don't know how modern monetary theory works. See, the velocity of money is so much more important than the money itself, and whether that's being held in accounts instead of being spent. And you see, when the government spends money, it actually increases our wealth rather than decreasing it.
Horse hockey.
I think that there's something to the velocity of money in modern monetary theory. I'm not going to say otherwise. But I
So here's a fun little story on that one. So two economists are walking down the road.
Tell us a story.
So two economists are walking down the road, and they see a pile of poop. And one of them says to the other, I'll pay you $1,000 to eat that. And he says, all right, that's worth it. And then they come to another pile. And the same thing happens in the opposite direction. And then he turns to him and says, you know, I can't help but feel maybe that wasn't the best idea. And he goes, hey, we increased GDP and the velocity of money.
Wow, that's poignant.
And didn't get anything done.
Yeah, that is our economy. How it is measured by the economists that are graduating through college.
Which gets us to the next word in this particular list. Greedflation.
Greedflation. Did you know that greed was actually recently invented?
No.
A lot of people don't know that.
What do you mean?
Some people think that like greed is just a thing that's always been with us.
I thought that was one of the seven like deadly sins or whatever, like greed and gluttony and I think they were fancier
about it and called it like avarice or something. But no, recently invented. Turns out corporations were not as greedy as they are now, which is why we can blame them for being greedy now. Because it wasn't just like a constant like gravity.
Oh, it was just invented recently?
Just invented.
Oh. Mark?
As though people didn't, they do the actions they do in order to get paid. And if, you know, ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't get paid, you wouldn't go to work tomorrow, right? That's how it works.
That is how it works. So greedflation, Miss Curran says, I don't know who Miss Curran is, it's a modern take on profiteering. Well, then why do we need a new word for it? Right? Making an unreasonable profit on the sale of essential goods, especially during times of emergency. Of course, price is how goods are distributed during a shortage or any other time, as opposed to The Economist magazine wrote, something
and
worse.
And to point out, there's always a shortage.
Right. Yeah. Otherwise, there'd be no shortage. Demand, right?
Right. And if
there's too many cars sitting on a lot at $30,000, there's a way to get rid of them. It's price them at $25,000.
Right. Yeah.
And if that didn't work, drop them to 20. I mean, there's always a lack of them because somebody will always buy scarce resources.
Yeah.
And I get how this annoys people when it gets to the extremes, but this is how the pricing system works. Like, there's this amount, there's this much demand in this, you know, given availability. So if you want more than that amount because there's a higher demand, then the price has to go up so that new people enter the market, say, hey, I will take advantage of that demand by giving more supply, which then brings the price back down.
And
like, I get how this annoys people when what we're talking about is water during a flood.
Right. Yeah.
But that is how you get those bottles of water down there. That's how you pay for the gas to get those thirsty people some water.
Yeah. If I were in the, the New Orleans hurricane and somebody was charging me $20 for a case of water that I could normally go to the store and buy for like $5 or whatever, right? Like, sure. Yeah. Oh, you got it with you? Yep. Here you go. Premium. You've with you? Yes. Right here to my door. Thank you very much. Right? You know, you have my gratitude and my money, but, you know, that's fine. What I don't like about this particular definition is that it says making an unreasonable profit.
Uh-huh.
Well, who decides that?
Well,
politicians
the gods
who
in the
don't
government.
Live by profits, politicians who demand their paycheck at the point of a gun, if necessary, they're the ones who decide exactly what a reasonable profit is. People who hate profit don't know anything about it.
See, a reasonable profit is one where part of it goes into my campaign. And an unreasonable profit is one where I haven't learned how to put them under my thumb yet.
It all comes clear now.
It's very simple.
All right. So moving on to the next one. Excuseflation. Like, this is a new one. I'm like, wait, excuseflation? This one sounds like...
I will never excuseflation.
This sounds a lot like the above-mentioned greedflation, Curran cites a paper by UBS AG chief global economist Paul Donovan, who claims developed economies are in a period when some companies spin a story that convinces customers that price increases are fair when in fact they disguise profit margin expansion. Not sure. That sounded like a lot of word salad.
Well, so there's a lot packed into there.
Yeah.
So, like, part of the idea there is that there is this weird, objective, nebulous what the right price is. And that that's not a thing that is discovered through buying and selling. And then if you you padded that by having more profit, that is evil.
They give an example. They say a baker in Chicago said on a Bloomberg podcast that global news events allow him to raise prices without getting a whole bunch of complaining from the customers.
Well, the fact is he's been holding his prices at a certain rate for a long time while the government's been increasing over time the supply of money. So, you know, he was getting pinched harder and harder, and he had to raise his prices at some point. And yes, it was the global news that allowed his customers, hey, you know, the government's printing money. I guess you're going to have to raise your rates. And the thing that I'd like to point out here is this is the core of the fascist philosophy. I'm not using that terminology flippantly. This is, in fact, what the fascists think. The fascists say we are going to work with big business to get a reasonable profit so that these big businesses support us and we support them. And this makes the nation stronger. And the one thing that big businesses can agree upon is that no one should be competing with them. So the little guy, the baker in Chicago, never has a chance to compete against Bimbo, because Bimbo's in with the government. I don't know if everybody else knows that there is a national bakery called Bimbo, but it uses the crap out of me.
This is called Sara Lee.
Okay.
Are you calling Sara Lee a Bimbo?
Yes. Indeed,
I will in a minute.
Little Debbie has something to say about that.
Yeah, but Big Debbie's inevitable.
So, I mean, that's essentially what I wanted to say this is the philosophy as fascism.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying. That's what they're doing. They just don't call it fascism anymore.
Yeah, and people don't necessarily know what I'm talking about when I tell you that our banking system is fundamentally fascist. I mean, there is no separation between the corporations and the government in our banking system. Does not exist. And exactly as you said, and specifically for this purpose, all of the biggest bankers on earth got together and said, how can we make sure that no one can ever compete with us? Because we've been trying to compete with each other, and we're pretty sure that no one's going to be able to unseat anyone else. But we can just agree that all of us get to stay right where we are and basically run the world.
There are, a couple, two, three more of these terms still to come here tonight on Free Talk Live that are, as I like to call, the vernacular of financial oppression, because that's exactly what's happening. They're making up new terminologies for words that already exist in order to deflect blame from you, the consumer, in their general direction. The telephone number here is 603-283-6160. You're welcome to join Mark Peekless and myself. It's Free Talk Live. Hour number two is next.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Rising fees have made Bitcoin useless for purchases, but Dash continues to have fees less than 1 cent per transaction, and its features ensure Dash is undefeated as the most useful cryptocurrency in the marketplace. From a technical standpoint, Dash transactions are irreversible, and its network is protected from 51% attacks by their Chainlocks technology. There's no need to wait for a confirmation before considering a Dash transaction complete, so it's great for merchants. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Big thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
Talk Live.
Yes, it is Free Talk Live. If you're unfamiliar with our program, we have a website you can visit. It's called freetalklive.com. freetalklive.com. In the studio tonight, it's myself, the Lord Reverend Dr. Captain Kickass. Joining me,
Beakless Mountaineer, and joining us remotely from Florida,
Mark Edge,
who's here this time.
Yeah, nailed it.
Nice. Good job on the timing, Mark. Well done.
Thank you.
Also, there have been some folks who've said, Mark doesn't sound as good as he does normally. You sound great tonight, so whatever you're doing, keep it up.
It's an RE20. I got it from Michael W. Dean.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's the guy you want to get it from, if you want to get it from anywhere. Because if he hasn't done anything to modify it, I'd be surprised. But if he has, it's going to sound great.
Even if he hadn't, it's still the best microphone you can get. I mean, probably it's probably priced too much, but it's the best microphone you can get.
At least for radio, anyway.
And then I got the downward expander, and Jay and Libertariat in the chat helped me set it up. So
boom.
Yep.
Just like, well, I don't know how to. Oh wait, calling on a community, to help you with a tech problem and actually solving it without government intervention.
We can do that. No, there's got to be a Department of IT.
Is that how problems get solved? Because it seems to me that, like, no problems get solved unless government gets involved and then makes it take, like, 10 times as long and 30 times the price.
Well,
What we're about here.
At this point, the government did throw my IT guy in jail, so I have to go where I can.
That's true.
So how do people get to this chat room? Because I don't frankly know how people
which
get
chat
to
room.
The one where Libertariat and...
Oh, is that one chat.freetalklive.com?
I assume so. Right. I assume so. The answer to your question, I don't know. I'm not your in-jail IT guy. So, okay. Yeah. I largely ignore the chat rooms while we're doing the show for only this reason. It's not called, hey, respond to the chat room on the Radio Talk Live.
Well,
if you have something to say, call 603-283-6160. We've set up this show specifically for that reason.
Yeah, we're not free type live.
Yeah, yeah. So,
well, I would say this, though. The chat room is about one of the few places where you can get a live person interacting. Because here on Free Talk Live, and frankly, talk radio around the nation, the likelihood that one of the many, many, many thousands of people is going to call me on a telephone, you know, grab the thing off the wall with a little curly Q line and pick up and give me a call. I mean, there's a few people who do so.
Magic rectangles have phones built into them now, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any just saying.
Before we go on, Free Talk Live is brought to you by LibertyMinded.com. You can get official Free Talk Live gear like t-shirts and hoodies that are available at LibertyMinded.com. Plus, you'll find a unique collection of cool and funny Liberty-oriented clothing at LibertyMinded.com. That's LibertyMinded.com. I'm personally very glad that Liberty Minded is around. I have yet to buy something, but I did see a new-looking Free Talk Live hoodie around the studio here in the last couple of weeks or so. And I thought to myself, that is what I want. And so I shall get one from LibertyMinded.com.
Nice.
All right. So we've been talking about the vernacular of financial oppression. That's the best like summary that I can give for this type of a thing.
Yeah, and I gotta say, so far all of this has just been another example of no, the economy is great, you just don't understand how great our economy is because you happen to be paying higher prices, you know, at the pump and on your bills and in the grocery store, but we geniuses who've been to Yale and Harvard know that's not core inflation. See, inflation is where you take out all those prices that are, you know, they're really volatile, and you literally have no option but to pay them. Those are the prices that don't matter. We have a great economy. You just don't know how to count it.
You know, the only people that tell me that the economy is great would do anything to see Joe Biden reelected.
Fact.
Like they would do or say anything. Yes, the sky is not blue today. It is a delightful shade of plaid. Like they would say anything, no matter how ridiculous. Now, I'm not saying that there's not some good indicators in the economy, nor am I saying that the bad economy is Joe Biden's fault or, frankly, the president's fault at all. I think that the Bill Clinton quote is the best one, and I don't have it sitting here in front of me, but it's something to the effect of, it's like congratulating the bull rider on riding the bull, you know, that, you know, the president and doesn't have that much to do with the economy, but certainly just spending willy nilly isn't particularly good for it. And, you know, calling for the printing of more money, they don't even follow modern monetary theory. Modern monetary theory would have you spending when times are bad, like they are now.
Yep.
And then paying off that debt when times are good. Right. But they never do that.
No, no, we that's Keynesianism. See, now modern monetary theory updated that because we noticed that while Keynesianism...
He called it modern monetary theory first, and now it's the modern monetary theory.
The most modern
see, you're right.
Theory.
See, you are correct.
John Maynard Keynes, you know, the greatest economist of all time.
Not.
Like Nobel Prize winning... now he taught us how, like, that's exactly what a good economy is where the government spends a bunch of money when things are bad and then, you know, reels it back in and takes in some taxes when times are good. But what he didn't realize is that we need to spend more money all of the time, just all of the time forever.
All right. So let's review. Thus far, we've talked about the word shrinkflation. We've talked about the phrase drip pricing. We've talked about greedflation. And we've also talked about excuseflation. So the next one is seller's inflation. Like, what does that mean? This term is credited to Isabella Weber, an assistant professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts, who claims large corporations have market power and have used supply problems as an opportunity to increase prices and scoop windfall profits. Her solution is price controls, which would, of course, lead to long lines and rationing.
And bloody shortages. That's what happened. Look, if you say the price can't go above a certain amount... and you need to put it above that amount in order to keep producing it, you stop producing it.
If you say, you can't sell a car for more than $30,000, but it costs you $35,000 to produce that car, guess what's happening? That car ain't getting produced.
Yeah.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, the truth of the matter is that these people think that the people who supposedly set these prices are in utter control of them. They're not. They never were. They are doing their best guess to see how much they can price it and it still get bought. But it still getting bought is up to the situation they're in.
The thing that bothers me most about this particular one, seller's inflation, is this term is credited to Isabella Weber, an assistant professor of economics.
Oh, well, that explains it. Yeah, no, all the stuff I've been saying about how, like, yeah, we have all of these, you know, neo-Keynesian, like, modern monetary theory.
That's what this is.
Yeah, yeah. So the fact of the matter is, and they've tested this, once you've been educated in economics, you know less about economics than before you were educated in economics. We have tested this.
Yeah.
It is reliable and factual. And this is why,
but
because,
like,
their job is not to actually do things well. It is to explain the actions of the people in power so that you agree to put them back in power.
Now you're talking. Because I was going to say, like, for me, when I never studied economics up until somebody pointed out Austrian economics.
Right.
Right. And so then I'm like, well, what's the difference between this and regular economics, right?
Well, this is sane, you see.
And like, no, it turns out that, like, it's just how economics actually is versus how they want you to think. Like, the system, the government, the banks, the Wall Streets, right, all these people, they want you to believe that economics is such a complex beast that mm-hmm. you could never understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Only us, only we, the elite, we, the educated, the Yale and the Harvard, as you mentioned earlier, only we who have studied under the mighty Keynes can understand the many complexities of what economics... No, that's not true. You all can understand economics just fine. It's supply and demand.
Yeah.
So here's supply and demand, period. Here's
where when anybody's talking about economics and they say, actually, the next thing that comes out of their mouth is likely a lie.
Yeah, so the way we ended up here is that the people in all of these other fields looked at what the priests had going for them and said, I want a piece of that. So the priests had this great idea of like, oh, see, this text, it is way too complicated for you to understand. It's written in languages that you don't read. It has references you couldn't begin to comprehend. We educated people will interpret it for you. We will tell you what is in heaven beyond, what is in hell, where souls come from. We will let you know, and then you will act on the knowledge that we give you. And in law, they do the exact same thing. In economics, they do the exact same thing. And as many places as they can get people to believe that things are too complicated for them to understand,
right,
and that they need to rely on authorities to interpret reality for them, they will.
And they will.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, look at lawyers. The lawyer used to be a person who could read. He was a man of letters.
Yeah.
And now... It's, yeah, I mean, they write things in such a fashion that no one can read them.
Yeah, not even the lawyers themselves understand even right. their own niche markets most of the time. They take it on a case-by-case basis, and they must do boatloads of research on each individual case because we know that governments, prosecutors, judges, and juries are the most inconsistent thing when it comes to judicial delivery.
Well, in some ways. There are ways that they are absolutely consistent.
How so?
Okay, so for example, I mean, tip of the hat to them, they really do uphold their oath of upholding the court. Now, what that means is making the court look good. They always make the court look good and just and proper and superior to all humanity. They will always uphold government, authoritarianism, power, centralization, they are very predictable on those fronts. Now, whether those things are legal or not, that is the direction that they will rule in.
Yeah, so my dig on them is, of course, when it comes to delivering actual justice, those three entities, the prosecution, the judges, and the juries, rarely agree consistently on how justice should be dispensed. You're absolutely correct. Yes, they always make the court look good, and that's largely due to the what should be known as a conflict of interest, and that is to say the prosecution of any given case and the judge and oftentimes the law enforcement people or the federales or the FBI or whomever is involved all get their paycheck from the same frickin' place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in any other context, the court would chuck that out and be like, conflict of interest, you all can't get your pay from the same frickin' place.
Yeah.
But when it comes to delivering justice within the confines of the U.S. judiciary system, that goes out the window, and they're just like, no, it's fine. It's totally fine. What do you mean, conflict of it? We don't recognize your...
Yeah. I'm sure that the paychecks say something slightly different on them.
Oh, you know, yeah, of
you're
course.
You're talking about the U.S. Court of Appeals or whatever.
Of course they do. They have to obscure it in some way.
Right.
Yeah.
The whole thing is based
but
on
we all know where
things.
The paychecks come from. It used to be the judges were people respected in their community mm-hmm. who traveled around in some case. They were so respected that they were traveled around and they solved disputes elsewhere and this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But at some point or another, they got paid by the government.
Well, look, and it used to be that your peers were peers. They were members of your community. Whereas now, it's so backward that they think that if you know the person, you couldn't possibly judge them.
Mark, I don't. You weren't here, but I did attend Bonnie when she went to combat her whatever parking ticket that was gotten here in the Keene area.
And well, thank God. I hope justice was served.
And well, I mean, it wasn't, because it cost far more for them to drag the officer, the parking enforcement agent, the officer who wrote the ticket into court at $25 an hour. They paid for, you know, time to get there during the thing, and then time to get, you know, so they paid way more than the $10 ticket, right, to just bring this person. But like, they had a judge and they had somebody serving as I got to call them a prosecutor. I don't know what else to call them. They were acting like, if you were in a courtroom, they would have been that person filling that role. They called them something different. But I can tell you for a fact that here in Keene, New Hampshire, that judge, that particular person acting as a prosecutor, and that agent, that parking enforcement officer, all got their paycheck from City of Keene.
And they've all heard about Free Staters, and they all hate them.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and obviously, it is against whoever is being brought in there. For very obvious and simple reasons, it's the other golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rule.
Yeah.
So whoever is paying thing calls the tune.
What's
he
that?
Pays the piper.
The activists aren't poor in Keene, New Hampshire. In this case, it's the power rule. He who has the power isn't going to let it go.
Well, but what I'm saying is that the prosecutor is literally giving the judge his paycheck. The fact that he is prosecuting this is why the judge is getting money. So, of course, they're going to consciously or unconsciously side with the prosecution. And here's the pro tip, here's the like life hack on the subject: if you want things to go your way in court, sue them, because then you are responsible for giving the judge's paycheck, and then they will side with you against the defendant, which is them.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple once you break it down. I mean, it's evil, but it's how things are.
All right, so we've talked about sellers inflation a bit, and then like kind of got off on a tangent. Let's move on to disinflation. That's just inflation that insults you while it's at it. It's going to diss you. No, that's not true. Here's what they have to say about disinflation. Prices are rising, but at a lower rate of change.
That one I have heard. That one's a fairly old one.
So isn't that just slower inflation? Well,
yes. Yes.
Like, it's elderly inflation.
And that one tends not to get used very often. And here's why. When that happens, they will call it inflation is coming down.
Right. Yeah. Instead of it just slowed a little bit.
Right. What's actually happening is not that inflation is coming down.
Right.
It's that inflation is going up slower.
That's like when a politician says that they've successfully reduced the budget. No, they haven't. They've just successfully reduced the rate of spending that is continuously going up. They just slowed that a little bit.
Right.
And now they're able to claim.
We were going to spend this much money, and we lowered that to spend this much money. It's well more than we have that we're going to bring in, and has been since, well, I don't know, when Bill Clinton was in office, and that was just 1 year. I mean, like, it's... Before that, you'd have to go back to the 50s.
Okay, so this last one in the list here, immaculate disinflation.
Ooh,
yeah,
sounds sexy. What do we got?
Curran says,
sounds like Mary's involved.
It does, doesn't it? Or like somebody just caught some inflation, like out of the blue, like the Immaculate Reception out of the NFL days. You guys aren't football people.
No.
Anyway, Curran says that immaculate disinflation is the optimistic notion that Jerome Powell and the economists at the Eccles Building can bring prices under control without putting a bunch of people out of work. The Federal Reserve can either create money fast or create money slow. That's all it has. Jerome Powell is not the economy's Geppetto.
Well, it's not quite all it has. So let me give you an example. The Bank Term Funding Program, which almost nobody knows exists, the BTFP.
The Bank Term Funding Program? Yeah. Is this where they pay people to come up with these new terms so that the banks can get away with absconding our money?
Nope, a little more insidious than that.
All right.
So it was very simply a bailout. But because they called it the Bank Term Funding Program and they did it this way and this way instead of doing it the way that they did in 2008, no one was upset by it. So not only do they have the power to create money and determine how fast they create it, they also have sneaky ways of hiding that they're creating money. And something called jawboning, where they didn't actually change anything, but they talked in a certain way, and that made people act differently.
Again, vernacular.
Yeah. So the fact that they are such insanely powerful creatures in this economy means that if they use slightly different wording, the entire economy shifts in preparation for them doing something else, whether or not they're ever going to do that.
Mark?
Sounds right. I'm just listening.
The article continues. Murray Rothbard explained where inflation comes from everywhere and always. The fault of inflation is not in business monopoly, nor in union agitation, nor in the hunches of speculators, or in the greediness of consumers. The fault is in the legalized counterfeiting operations of the government itself. For the government is the only institution in society with the power to counterfeit, to create new money. So long as it continues to use that power, we will continue to suffer from inflation, even unto a runaway inflation that will utterly destroy the currency itself. Inflation, or whatever you want to call it, is nothing more than government taxation in stealth form. Only governments can conjure up new money from nothing, using it to bid away resources from private individuals.
And I want to explain that when we say inflation is theft, the idea that we're trying to get across to you is that if you have you're in this imaginary community that we talked about that has $1 million in it, right? It's a bubble, and that way you can understand it. And then somebody comes along and adds another $1 million to that economy. Now, they didn't create a single new car. They didn't replace a window. They didn't do anything. They just added money. And at some point or another, and not immediately, but at some point, the equilibrium is going to be found again. And there's no more wealth. There's no more cars. There's no more factories. There's no more nothing. There's just more money. And that money is going to be worth half as much. So when the government creates money, they spend it into the marketplace, or their cronies do. And that is how they take your wealth.
603-283-6160. Coming up, will we talk about neurowarfare owls, or will we talk about the never-ending surveillance crime spree?
Protection. Eleutheromania. The insatiable desire for freedom.
Filibuster. Police state.
It's the new three-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Yes, welcome back, and thank you for tuning in to tonight's edition of Free Talk Live. We're a live call-in radio program where you can call in and talk about whatever is on your mind. You can talk about what we're talking about, too. That's fine. But if you want to change the subject, that's totally fine, too. Hence the name Free Talk Live. In the studio, it's myself, the captain. Peakless Mountaineer is joining us. And remotely, it's
Mark Edge.
Very well. So we had been talking about, like, you know, the sort of vernacular of financial oppression. That's the shortest phrase that I could think of to use for all of those words that we talked about, shrinkflation and greedflation and, like, all these terms that are getting thrown around in, like, economic articles and periodicals that governments and banks and financial institutions are putting out. And like it's quite literally all just BS. There are other better words for these things. It's just that they want to soften the blow. They don't want you to know that you're getting hit in the face, or, you know, more accurately, in the wallet, for all of the things that they're doing. They want to place blame upon anyone except themselves. And so this is how they deflect. They create these new words, this new terminology, and deflect all of that so that you kind of don't, you continue to not understand what's going on economically. And so, you know, hopefully that's, you know, a bit of an education for our listeners out there, as far as the terminology or vernacular of financial oppression is concerned, particularly in the U.S.
Right? I do know that this is the most important election of our time, that if we don't pick the right guy, that the wrong guy is going to get in there and we're all going to, I mean, it's going to be another Kristallnacht.
And Mark, I mean, I know you're, I detect a hint of sarcasm there. And I detect that because I'm old enough.
If you don't, then I'm not doing my job.
I'm old enough to know that I think every presidential election has been referred to as the most important election of our lifetime.
What's weird is that's true.
How is that true?
Because the government gets more powerful.
Yeah, but they're going to do that regardless of the outcome of the election.
Right. So whoever gets in has more power than the guy before him. Like, they're not wrong. It's just that it still doesn't matter. Like, let me give you a great example.
And my point is that it doesn't matter, right? And so go ahead.
Let me give you a great example. Right now, we are teetering on the edge of World War III, and neither of your options are likely to keep us out of it.
No.
Yeah, it is the most important election ever, and we're going to lose because both of your options are going to get us into a world war.
Right. So what you're saying is my presumption is what you're saying here is that in one case, the one of the crooked old perverts is going to get us in a war with Russia,
mm-hmm.
and the other crooked old pervert is going to get us in war with China.
And what's great about this, if we get in a war with Russia, China will join Russia against us.
Oh, and no, they won't.
Are you kidding me?
Why would they? They're going to just go in there and clean up the mess. They'll take all of...
because the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Well, largely that, yeah. Because they have significantly stronger trade agreements with them, because they're literally on the cusp of creating a new EU, essentially, with them, the whole, like, BRICS union, because they're currently figuring out how to have a currency together. Like, they are way closer to Russia than the U.S.
The digital socialism, the digital communism that's happening in China, like, it's just insane, man. These people are slaves of a degree humankind has never seen before,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's not like people think, oh, well, you know, the being a slave in, you know, the 1700s in the U.S. or the 1800s, you know, was far worse. Like, no, because these people have the illusion of autonomy, right? They're able to walk. They can still go to, like, a grocery store or a gas station. They can go out to a concert if they can afford it, right? You know, they have this illusion. But when their government decides, no, you can't travel anywhere, right? They're forced to produce something on an app, on their magic rectangle, their portable device, and whatever their designation that the government has decided will allow them to either travel or not travel. It's a green or red. That's it. That's how they know they can go past this particular blockade, whether it looks like a turnstile to the subway or if it's a full-on military roadblock. It doesn't matter. They have the technology. They're subjecting these people to it. And they just think it's part of everyday life. They're growing up with it. This next generation of Chinese are growing up with this digital socialism, this digital communism, and they just think it's just how life is.
Well, that's how you keep the flu from spreading, don't you know?
No, it's not. But I want to segue off of that a little bit and talk about the U.S. A little bit and the never-ending federal surveillance crime spree. It is my opinion that the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, is the modern equivalent of the Gestapo.
Fact.
Like, real close, like, if not, like, you know, just because they wear smiley faces on the back of their jacket doesn't mean they're not armed and they're not being Gestapo-like.
Yeah, I mean, there are some surface-level differences. I mean, they are not actively just abducting people into the night with no fanfare. Like, they are still making press releases from time to time.
Yeah.
But are they doing their job being constrained by their, you know, by their pieces of paper? No.
Right. And so, speaking of the pieces of paper, last December, one of the most intrusive provisions in the federal statute book was set to expire. Section 702 of the Foreign Surveillance or Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, also known as FISA, we've talked about this at length here on Free Talk Live, authorizes the NSA to vacuum up trillions of emails and other data. A bevy of bipartisan members of Congress called for radically curtailing those nullifications of Americans' privacy. But the effort to put a leash on the federal surveillance failed dismally. Huh, weird. It's almost as if they don't want it to be taken off the books.
Well, sure, we've been doing this, but it's legal now.
Congress voted a four-month extension of FISA, which will likely be followed in April. That's coming up next month, like a couple days from now. A much longer extension. There was a bipartisan congressional conspiracy to entitle the deep state to continue trampling the Constitution. In 1978, Congress passed the FISA Act to outlaw political spying, such as like the FBI has committed on American citizens. FISA created a secret court to oversee federal surveillance of suspected foreign agents within the United States, permitting a much more lenient standard for wiretaps than the Constitution permitted for American citizens.
See, FISA is very important. It's where the government consults itself for permission to do things. It turns out they've, you know, approved almost everything, but, you know, it's very important.
The FISA court created a secret body of law giving the NSA the power to amass vast collections of data on Americans, the New York Times reported in 2013 after Edward Snowden leaked court decisions. The court rubber-stamped FBI requests that bizarrely claimed that the telephone records of all Americans were relevant to a terrorism investigation under the Patriot Act, thereby enabling National Security Administration data seizures, which were later denounced by a federal judge as almost Orwellian. Almost. Like, what would it take, judge, for this to be actually Orwellian to you?
Here's a better question. What would it take, judge, for you to punish the people who are breaking the law against innocent, peaceful Americans?
In 2017, a FISA court decision included a 10-page litany of FBI violations, which ranged from illegally sharing raw intelligence with unauthorized third parties all the way to accessing intercepted attorney-client privileged communications without proper oversight. The latest controversy.
I want to jump in here. What Peakless said just sort of, you know, got me to thinking. You know, everybody knows that Sam Bankman-Fried of FTX was sentenced this week. I'm not sure which Sunday, so it's last week. And that he got 25 years. And, you know, understand, I don't feel terrible about that or anything. But if the judge cared anything about Americans having their money taken from them, anything, if he cared anything about it, he would, A, make the politicians give back any of the money that they still have that he donated. That seems like an obvious one. And B, he would say, okay, 25 years, but, and I don't know how much is owed. I really don't. You've got, you know, I'll give you a year off for every $100 million that you return to your investors. And I do to air quotes. And then SBF would use, I mean, this is a really smart guy.
Right.
He's just got drunk with money. I'm not saying he's a good guy, but that's what happened to him. And he would then use that prodigious brain power to go about attempting to get as much money, because I'd be willing to bet that he's got several billion dollars on a thumb drive someplace, on a, you know, in some words that he's memorized, whatever. He's got some money socked away. And if he could trade that money for years off of his sentence, who would be harmed by that?
Right.
Because prison isn't going to fix him. It isn't going to suddenly make him a moral individual who then goes to work in 25 years when he gets out, or probably 12 and a half, and begins to, you know, do the right thing.
Yep.
Well, yeah, I can tell you exactly who would be harmed by that. The current system.
Sure.
So the entire purpose, the reason that he had this widely televised sentencing and all of this, like the reason that he was in the news everywhere and getting arrested and getting put into court and now into jail, all of that was to make sure that everyone in the financial sector knew you don't touch crypto. It's dangerous to us.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. They wanted the mass public to further believe that cryptocurrency is something that, like, oh my gosh, criminals and like scoundrels, those are the people who talk about and deal in cryptocurrency. It's like, no, go FCC yourself.
Yeah.
That is not the truth. And in fact, if you want to see one of the most illegitimate Ponzi schemes, ripoffs, fraudulent, like, things ever put onto a society, you need look no further than an entity called the Federal Reserve.
Right. And since you bring this up, here's a fun fact. So because so FTX didn't close when this all went down.
Right.
They just went through the whole, like, proceedings to stay open and pay off this and all of that. So check this out. So they had all of these cryptocurrency holdings, Bitcoin and a bunch of others, right? So because all of those have gone up so high in dollar value, they are able to pay back everyone, but in dollars.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah. Oh, also, fun fact, we still haven't hit a new all-time high if you account for inflation.
That's true as well.
Yeah, in just those 4 years, they've managed to push the value of dollars so low that getting significantly higher than our old all-time high, not enough.
We have more to say specifically about all of this FISA stuff and the never-ending surveillance crime spree, but we've got somebody on hold we should probably talk to. This is Gigi in South Carolina. You're on Free Talk Live.
Your secret passion, who's not a secret anymore, according to Richie.
Oh, that's right. I forgot to announce that. This is Gigi, my secret crush, calling on Free Talk Live.
If only I could do what they did on Star Trek and beam you down. I need Scotty to help me. I'd have you come and sit at my table and cook for you.
You make a mean brisket?
I actually do. I'm a Jewish girl.
And
they make a mean brisket.
I ate dinner, but, like, my tummy's grumbling.
Oh, you're so cute. Hey, I like listening to all of you gentlemen discussing things about financial history because I often ask myself, self, was Alexander Hamilton correct? Get rid of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was he talking about getting rid of?
What do you think, Richie?
Richie's not here, man.
What did Hamilton suggest getting rid of? I'm sorry.
Mark.
Yes, tis I.
Good evening, sir. Alexander Hamilton was always going crazy and screaming at everybody in the Federalist Party as well as the, excuse me, emerging Republican Party with Jefferson. Don't have a centralized banking system.
Oh, you've got
Leave
that
it
one
alone.
Backwards.
Get rid of it. No,
that's not
magic.
Hamilton. That's Jefferson. Hamilton was always strongly
was
in
Hamilton.
Favor of it. Hamilton was he in fact created the first National Bank of America.
I just looked it up
Jefferson
real quick, Gigi. It says here, why is Alexander Hamilton considered the father of modern banking?
And that's why. Yeah, you've got the two backwards.
Oh, I inverted the names. You're correct. Please excuse me. I stand corrected. I got all mixed up.
It's okay.
Yeah, same
what, you're
battle,
human?
Wrong sides.
You're human? Wow, I would have never guessed that, Gigi.
Oh, listen, you've heard me for years on the show. If I make a mistake, I have no problem admitting it. That is how I constantly learn. And there's no shame in saying, I made a mistake.
And way
this
too many people.
Being an adult.
Yeah, way too many people have not learned that lesson, in my opinion, on planet Earth.
Well, I'm still learning it on a weekly basis. But I have a question, gentlemen.
All right.
Because you guys know, and all the listeners out there know, I'm very fond of international relations. So, I heard several times this past week, the current political leader of the Irish Free Republic, I don't know the gentleman's name, he was previously a practicing physician, his mother is Irish, his father is Indian, and he's the first openly gay elected politician to head Ireland, and he is resigning. And a new leader is going to be replacing him very soon from a very conservative political party. What happened? Why is this gentleman resigning?
You tell me. I don't keep up on this stuff.
No, I don't know. I was hoping one of you gentlemen could fill me in.
Oh, I've long since given up on Europe.
Well,
I don't pay attention to what they do because nothing that they do is remotely headed in the right direction.
Well,
so,
he was so progressive with so many wonderful, open-minded ideas economically, socially, politically, and now he is walking away. Something happened.
From, I don't know the answer. All I can do is glean from, you know, what's been reported in the news, and, well, who knows how accurate that is. This from Al Jazeera, Northern Ireland leader Jeffrey Donaldson resigns after police charges.
Oh, no, that's Northern Ireland. I'm talking about the Irish Free State, Northern Ireland. That old fart, he got caught with sex scandals. I don't give a damn who he's sleeping with or what he's doing. That ain't my business.
Yeah, that's actually a really important distinction between Northern Ireland and Ireland.
I said from the Irish
you
Free
did.
Republic.
You yeah. did. Yeah. I think you're talking about, is it Leo Varadkar?
Yes, yes, sir. That's the gentleman.
This from the BBC, the headline reads, Leo Varadkar, I am no longer the best man to be the Irish Prime Minister.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
I would like to know. And earlier you guys were talking about, as you always do, libertarian agendas, particularly regarding social and political and economic issues. So I got a very interesting letter from Ian. He should only stay safe, my pen pal buddy. And he was writing to me about the new democratically elected political leader of Argentina, who is very, very outspoken in favor of a libertarian agenda.
Yes.
However, as I returned my letter to Ian, I wrote, funny thing, however, with a big comma, why is he not permitting freedom of speech and political demonstrations?
Oh, because they will all be bought by the socialist opposition, and they will destroy a whole lot of stuff in the process, and then he'll be blamed for all of the destruction, and a lot of people will rethink their vote.
Damn,
it's really that simple. I wish things were otherwise, but frankly, they are not advanced enough.
Disallow such things? I mean, doesn't that violate libertarian principles?
Well, so
isn't it considered hypocritical?
Is he disallowing a thing, or is he?
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
So I've never really had a stance on his social policies. I have a stance on his Gigi.
Outspoken Gigi. About pro-choice.
Can I finish a sentence?
Legally mandated in Argentina, same-sex marriage. He's good with. However, it's the freedom of speech issue, and I say again. We're sending tons of money and military aid and training Ukrainians here in the United States. And the leader of Ukraine is not permitting the scheduled elections to take place.
Mm. Right.
And I have a
funny
big
way to defend democracy, ain't it?
All right. So hang on, Gigi, because
well,
Peekless wanted to Pinkless wanted to finish, so hold on for just a second.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I haven't been trying to defend his social positions at all. I've been trying to defend his economic positions. His economics is libertarian. His social positions, not so much. And to be real specific, he's not actually against free speech here. He's against the freedom to assemble, which are somewhat different, because you can say anything you want. He's not worried about people saying stuff. He's worried about them lighting the country on fire and him getting blamed for it, and specifically his opponents paying people who don't actually care to go light the country on fire so that he gets blamed for it.
Then you need to answer Ian's letter, because you got the answers, and I couldn't answer it. I told Ian in the letter, I don't know. And Ian wrote back, call the next time and ask on the show. So I'm doing it.
Yeah. Well, and it's really, really unfortunate that...
instructions.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate that all of the leaders who are doing anything libertarian in the economic sense, you know, Malay or the Bitcoiner of El Salvador, like these people who are having libertarian economic policies are having deeply authoritarian social policies. And
yeah,
that's very unfortunate. And that's part of why it's so important to remember that we're not conservatives. Conservatives do have a tendency in general to be libertarian in their economic views and authoritarian in their social views.
Distinction with that.
Yeah. Now, Gigi, while we've got you, I just real
again,
quick.
Teach me. We are always learning.
Hold on,
and
Gigi.
And I feel when I learn something from anyone, I get smarter because I am empowered with information.
Well, I want you to empower me with information on this. I know you used to be in the legal field. And what's your take on Julian Assange and what he's been charged with and whether that would apply to him?
Oh, my husband and I, we were talking about that as recently as earlier today. Yes. Well, we were making distinctions between whistleblowers, citizen, journalism, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and to force someone or to compel them to enter into an agreement where they would plead guilty to mishandling classified information would have him admit to his negligence, guilt, culpability. Hell, he's not even a citizen. How can they do that and charge him with espionage?
Right.
That's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure that someone who was intimately familiar with the legal field could see that one,
too. That's a good word you use when I'm talking to the captain.
Gigi, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate you. Feel free to call us again, 603-283-6160. If you would like to join the conversation tonight with Peakless Mark and myself, the captain, it's Free Talk Live. Don't go anywhere. Hour number three is still to come.
Free Talk Live.
I wasn't really listening, but you see, I don't speak for the sake of speaking. I speak from the heart. My words reveal me, which is why I have nothing to say to you. Yes, it is Free Talk Live.
Does that mean you're heartless?
I speak from the heart. My words reveal me, which is why I have nothing to say to you.
Because you're heartless.
No, because
I have nothing.
Well,
if you speak from the heart and have nothing to say, then there's nothing in your heart.
I have nothing in my heart to say to you.
Cold-hearted bastard.
Yes. Towards you. Not you, but like in this. It is a lyric from a song from, you know, some time ago. A band called Kilgore.
So you're not actually speaking your words when you talk about how you speak from the heart.
I was reciting a lyric, yes. It's true.
There's an irony in that.
Well, and also, like, you know, it sounds cool. Right, so there's that.
There is that.
Which is nice, and I've got that going for me. It is Free Talk Live in the studio. It's myself, the captain.
And Peakless Mountaineer, and joining us remotely from Florida,
Mark Edge, a large barge crashed into the Arkansas River Bridge, causing damage to both the ship and the bridge pillar. Who had double bridge damage from boats this month?
Was it not on my bingo card?
Was it a large barge with Captain Marge, who was large and in charge?
I'm checking here for Captain Marge. She's not listed.
Details perhaps are not forthcoming.
Yeah, perhaps they just found Marge on the boat and they didn't want to jump to a conclusion that large Marge was, in fact, in charge of the barge, large barge.
Speaking of boats hitting bridges, the other one in Baltimore, also known as Baltimore, to those of you not from there. I heard a thing, and I just briefly searched and I couldn't find it, but is there the name of a captain of the one that hit the bridge in Maryland?
All I have is Singapore.
Okay. Somebody pointed out on the internets that, like, yeah, ask yourself why they haven't released the name of the captain piloting that boat.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, they haven't released the name of the captain piloting that boat? And I was like, Captain, you know, Maryland Bridge crash, whatever, right? I tried a couple different things, and I couldn't find anything that told me the name of the captain of that boat.
No, well, we knew right away with the Exxon Valdez in Alaska.
Oh, wow.
And you knew right away in Tampa when they knocked down the Skyway Bridge, and I think that was 1980.
Why you got to bring up not old a lot of stuff, these... Mark?
Well, that's all we've got for knocked down bridges.
Well, if I had to hazard a guess, it's because it would be politically inconvenient to people in power to find out who it was that did this.
Uh-huh.
Okay, before we go on, I want to say thank you.
You think it might be that whole DEI in piloting? If it's a trans person, they're screwed.
Yeah, perhaps. But before we go on, I need to stop both y'all and just say thank you to Bonnie Nestat. Bonnie Nestat is a gold level amplifier, which means she gives $10 a month to Free Talk Live. Why would Bonnie Nestat give $10 a month to Free Talk Live, you might ask? Well, we have a program called AMPS. It stands for Advertise, Market, Promote, and Support. And when you donate to this program, it helps to get this radio show onto more radio stations. We're currently on somewhere around 200 radio stations nationwide. We could be on more. We could be on 250, 300, 350 stations. Not out of the question. If you enjoy the perspective of freedom, peace, and prosperity that we bring to the airwaves, you enjoy the hosts, the co-hosts, and the callers of this program, please consider becoming an amplifier over at amps.freetalklive.com. Thank you again, Bonnie Nestat. We appreciate you and your contribution. All right. I know you guys have a bunch more to say, but we have at least one caller that we need to get to. Let's go to him right now. This is Jerome calling from which Carolina? East Carolina?
Charleston, South Carolina.
All right. All right. Welcome. You're on the air. What's on your mind, Jerome?
Your Eminence. Hey,
Hey, look, we're not the ones that go call our doc the mega doc.
Ooh.
I'm just
in
saying.
In honor of Easter being tomorrow, Your Eminence.
You gonna lay some eggs on us?
No, I'm gonna be sitting at home, man. I don't get involved in it. I'm too old to be chasing eggs around. I gotta take care of my own eggs, if you know what I mean.
Here comes Peter Cotton.
I'm hoping you're talking about your children.
I don't have any children.
Okay.
No one wants me.
I think he might be talking about his huevos.
Yeah.
That was like Spanish. Favorite song when I was growing up. One of my favorite songs is Nobody Wants You When You're Down and Out by Bobby Womack. I love that song. So now I'm limited.
I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah. Nobody wants you when you're down and out. Hey, I love that song. It's one of the, by the way, I need some advice, please.
All right.
Please, 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 please give me some advice. Now,
don't take the brown acid.
Abandon the Democratic Party.
There you go. Two pieces of advice.
Never, never, never. Not happening. Hey, I need some advice now. Trump has, he's selling Bibles for $60, and he's selling these cornball-looking sneakers for like $400.
Those nuts are amazing. Like, they are so ridiculous. We'll make them gold, but with an American flag on them.
I guess there's such sneaker collectors that they just don't have a choice. If you're a sneaker collector, you have to have the Trump shoes, I would think.
I have to ask, is there a Trump value pack where you can get both a Bible and a pair of sneakers for one low price?
No. You got
somebody
Trump
advertised
University.
A Trump silver coin on Free Talk Live at one point.
Huh. You got Trump University. You got the Trump steaks. You got the Trump alcohol. You got the shoes. You got the Bible.
Wait, Trump's got his own line of booze?
Did.
I'm just making that up.
No, I'm pretty sure he actually did have his own line of like vodkas or something at one point.
But I don't drink, Susan. I don't drink. I might drink a beer every now and then, but that's about it.
That's right. I drink enough for all of us.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, that sounds like a personal problem to me. Anywho.
I have a good time.
But he's out hawking the Bible. I said, now, you know, you can mess with man, but when you start messing with God, you asking for trouble.
Oh, my gosh. I just had a thought, Jerome. I just had a thought. Okay, how... Knowing that Trump is pimping these two different products, right? One, the Bible. Two, these gaudy Trump shoes, right? How could he position both of these products simultaneously with...
And at the same time.
Simultaneously. Thank you, Mark. Yes. That's what simultaneously means. At the same time. And also, like, do it within just one target marketing demographic. He needs to make a partnership with the Jehovah's Witnesses. And so these Jehovah's Witnesses, as they go door to door, knocking and asking if you have accepted the Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, into your heart, they can wear Trump's shoes and sell his Bibles while they're pimping their own religion door to door. What do you think?
One of my favorite questions they ask him, you know, from the right-wing media, asking, well, what's your favorite Bible verse? Oh, yeah, right. He's got a favorite Bible. You fell for it, huh, suckers? One of my favorite Bible verses is, oh, yeah, right. Sure, your favorite Bible. He reads the Bible.
I haven't looked into it, but my guess is that somebody came up to him and said, hey, Donald, I'm selling Bibles. What do you think about a Trump branded Bible? And he's like, sure, I'll get behind it and see how many Bibles we can sell. And I agree it's laughable, but I mean, do you think it was his idea or you think it was somebody else's?
I think it's magnanimous of him to share credit with God.
Right.
I mean, that's just so giving of Trump.
Yeah, you know, you've been hanging around with me too long now. See, now you're starting to get the sarcastic block.
Jerome, you just never listen to what I say. I've never been on this guy's side. I've been saying since day one, the only thing that is different about him is that he's addicted to fame instead of power.
Oh, that sounds right. Another one of my favorite songs, David Bowie, Fame.
Jerome, songs. You're entertaining, but man, like, I hope you don't sing for a living.
What? You mean I don't have the vocal? What? You don't like my singing?
I'm just saying, don't go beyond.
Better in the shower.
America's Top Idol or whatever?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. No, I was going to say Star Search because Jerome's old.
My mom was a very Christian person and she used to sing. So I'm kind of like channeling her sometimes when I do that.
So hold on, though. You seem to imply that he was going to upset the creator by selling Bibles. And I need you to connect those two.
All I know is, hey, you don't mess with God. You know my favorite things?
Well, hold on. This seems to be the exact opposite of messing with God.
Yeah.
I mean, like, walk me through this, how this would be messing with God.
I'll walk you through with it. But Trump walks into the church, catches fire.
That would at least be anecdotal evidence.
It would be awesome television too.
I've tried to look up this story, but I swear to God, in like 1993, I saw this on the news where a couple was getting married somehow during a rainstorm, I guess, because lightning struck the steeple of the church, ran down the lightning rod, caught the altar on fire, and they finished the wedding.
As the church lady used to say, could it be Satan?
You know, if I were the groom in this aforementioned wedding you described, Mark, I think I would have just called it off.
I'd have walked out.
I'd have been like, you know, I'm not a religious dude, but like, this is just, I don't think that I'm ever going to live this down, because I know divorce already happens in 50% of the marriages, and it seems like a wedding with these circumstances.
Are you thinking about getting married?
No, I'm married to my guitar. Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a very fulfilling relationship.
Oh, it's great.
You know what I mean.
I can touch.
Clearly,
you've
never played a guitar, Jerome.
I can finger the G string whatever I want to, and my guitar doesn't get mad.
What do you mean by fingering?
That's right. That's right. I don't fret about it.
Neither do I.
And I'm certain to pick at any other guitar that I want to, and none of my other guitars will get jealous.
Oh, sounds like a personal problem to me. Anyway,
it's not a problem at all.
It was good talking. It was good sharing my tribology with y'all for a few minutes with me. So it's time for Jerome to go now.
Oh, it's good to hear from you, Jerome.
Thanks for the call, Jerome. We appreciate you. Feel free to call again. Did you guys have any follow up to Jerome's?
No, I wish I could find that story where the church got struck by lightning, because I think it must have just been a dream. I can't imagine that's true, right? Like during a wedding, who has a wedding in a thunderstorm?
When you send out the invitations and everyone cleared their calendar and you find out that it's raining and it's indoors anyway, you go, let's go ahead.
Yeah. So that whole, what's the word I'm looking for? Rain on your wedding day.
Yeah, that's true. It's said to be good luck, actually.
It's said to be bad luck.
Oh, it's bad luck?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
no, rain on your wedding day is good luck.
Look, nobody sets out that I'm aware of, unless you're like a super gothy type person, you know, to have a rainy wedding day.
Well, no, you don't set out to, but it's considered to be God's blessing to have, like, some moisture.
Since I have never myself gone through a wedding ceremony of any type, I have sat through them being, like, a best man or, you know, being invited to other people's weddings. I'm of the opinion that rain on your wedding day was supposed to be bad luck. Like, if it rained on your wedding day, it meant your marriage was going to be crap.
Well, no, I'm pretty sure that's why it made it into the isn't it ironic that rain on a wedding day, while a bummer, is considered to be good luck.
Mark, come on, you got to have some expertise here.
I don't know why. I can only presume that rain on your wedding day is, if one believes in such a thing, bad luck. I like this story, though.
Got it on the internet here. Rain is considered good luck.
Claims church burned down during gay wedding proven false. So that one is just a story. I don't know.
Huh. Oh, yeah, and I'm right about the origin. It stems from Hindu traditions, since rain creates fertile soil for crops to grow. Yeah.
Yes. Here we are. Rain is essential for the growth of crops in the same way it can symbolize growth of a new family. Huh. Interesting.
Booyah. Unless the lightning hits your church.
I didn't need the booyah, pal. That's a little much. Rub it in, man. Although you are exhibiting what I like to call the unwritten libertarian pride, which is when you're right.
I love being right.
Libertarians,
it's clear, though.
As a libertarian, it's my one true joy.
This was made up by some mom to calm down her upset daughter. That, why is it got to be me that it rained on the wedding day?
Yep.
Honey, good luck. What? Is it really? You know, back when people believed in luck.
Well, and
like demons and stuff.
I mean, my guess is honestly that it goes back to like nature worshiping pagan tradition.
Oh, I'm sure.
So, like, therefore, okay, what would the natural response of, like, oh, you've made it so we're not going to die. Well, that sounds like a good thing. So, thus a blessing.
Perhaps.
There's a foot at the end of each of my legs. Is it luck? No one. Okay.
Right over my head.
Clunk.
Yeah.
There's some listener out there who's familiar with the band Primus. Like, Nikki's probably listening right now, and she's like, oh, Captain. Right? You know what I mean? I made a Primus pun.
Yeah, so I did want to say, as far as, like, Drome's idea that he was messing with God, it's like, well, now, wait a second. Now, there are a lot of people who really, really love Trump. Like, really, really love
so
Trump.
So much so that they might have some sort of a nickname, like Trump Humper?
Could be.
Okay.
I found the story. I did.
Tell him what he's won, Bob.
Let me read this thing real quick.
All right, go
from
ahead.
The DailyMontanan.com, Billings couple whose wedding interrupted by lightning, fire department, still happily married. This is from April 25th, 2022. There had been nothing particularly remarkable about the Saturday afternoon wedding at St. Patrick's Co-Cathedral in Billings. The couple had met working at Hardy's Restaurant in Billings. It was early June, nearly perfect wedding weather. And the priest's words, and I left this part out because I just thought this makes the story sound so unbelievable. At that point in the service, we're very familiar. If anyone here has a reason to object, let him speak now or forever hold his peace. No one stood to speak, but in that split second moment, there was a loud boom from outside, a flicker of the lights, and the clicking of the emergency exit lights kicked on, probably just a power transformer blowing somewhere nearby. Besides, the candles lit around the cavernous church were enough light for the late spring wedding. It wasn't long before those sitting in the pews were introduced by the priest as Eric and Linda Hom, the newest couple in Montana's Magic City. But as they were coming down the aisle right before they were to be whisked away to the reception in a horse-drawn carriage, the big wood doors at the entrance to the church popped open as firefighters were eager to get in without interrupting the wedding.
Wow.
And I don't see anything about fire in here, but I guess the flicker of lights made them think it was fire. And it did come at the time that I thought I remembered, but I just didn't mention in the story when it's the speak now or forever hold your peace. So it's true.
Wow.
If anyone should blah, 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 speak now. Silence.
And it's about the right time frame, too. What did I say? 1992. This is 2022 and 30 years. So 93.
Yeah.
No, 91.
Take that, long COVID.
Sorry for interrupting, guys. I just couldn't believe my luck.
Yeah, right? Mark. Yeah, you totally need to apologize for interrupting us on your show.
How dare you?
Yeah,
it's your show.
I mean, the gall of the gallivanter to just, you know, think that he can speak up on a topic he wants to bring up on Free Talk Live.
But yeah. So as far as so I mean, there are some people who, like, I don't think it's unfair to say that there are Trump worshipers. So really, the fact that he's sick, encouraging these Trump worshipers to have a Bible. Now, if you believe that that Bible is actually all about the Creator, then wouldn't you have to be in favor of that?
Yeah.
Just a thought. And I came to a thought about a previous caller, Gigi, since she was talking about the new prime minister.
Yeah.
Now, the last time that we had a prime minister unexpectedly step down that I remember hearing about was when Brexit went through. And he said, yeah, I'm not going to do this. Like, it was like after they'd finally taken the second vote and gotten an overwhelming, yes, we want to exit the European Union. And Cameron said, no, I will not facilitate the exit from the European Union, and suddenly stepped down. So my guess would be that something or other that he does not want to be associated with is going to happen in Ireland, whether he likes it or not.
Yeah.
And he wants to get away from that so that he doesn't have that as a stain on his perfect diversity, equity, and inclusion record.
I'm surprised I'm not paying attention more to any of that. And I only say that because one of the destinations that I would like to travel to, at least for, you know, a vacation, a period of time, a couple of weeks, something like that, is Ireland. And so, like, you know, it would behoove a guy who is considering traveling out there for some period of time to probably be aware of, you know, the political climate before he books a flight, that kind of a thing. So not that I have a date in mind or anything right now, but, like, it's on my bucket list. I got a friend of mine who lives over there now. He expatriated, seriously, like, literally. Like, he is now an Irish citizen. And so he's been like, dude, you got to come over. You just got to come over. You're going to love it. You got to check it out. You got to come over. And I'm like, sure, I'll do it. And I never did. So, like, it's on my bucket list. I got to do it. But, like, I also don't want to do it when, like, you know, I don't know, I might die or something. Right. You know, so I'll try and pay more attention.
Yeah. And especially right now when they just passed a whole bunch of cryptocurrency regulations, like, am I still going to be, like, susceptible to that when I did these things before you passed the law?
You talking about the EU?
Yeah. And Ireland, like Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, is still part of the European Union. So, yeah, I mean, that's honestly a little scary at this point.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because I do have something in show prep that talks about what the EU is trying to do specifically to hosted crypto wallets. And we could talk about that coming up here on Free Talk Live tonight. Also, who, if we get to it, 603-283-6160. Don't go anywhere. Final segment of Free Talk Live is still to come. Welcome back, and thank you for joining us tonight on this Saturday edition of Free Talk Live. In the studio tonight, it's myself, the Captain.
And Peakless Mountaineer. And joining us remotely from Florida,
it's Mark Edge.
That's two words, Mark Edge, not Mark Edge.
Mark Edge.
Yeah, not to be confused. Before we go on, I have to tell you, I don't have to, but I'm going to tell you, that Free Talk Live is brought to you by ForkFest, happening June 13th through the 16th at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. ForkFest is a fork of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. ForkFest is decentralized, so there is no ticket cost and no one is in charge. For more information and to connect with other attendees, you can visit the unofficial website forkfest.party. That's forkfest.party. I hope.
Do you think that website will ever become official?
Never.
Let's hope not. Like, because if it does, that means that, like, at least the website itself will have been centralized.
We've been advertising that website
for years. It's got to be official now.
No, if it ever becomes official, then we have to start doing a different one.
Then we have to fork another site off of that one, right? Yeah. The unofficial forkfest.party or something like that. We'll have to get some other elongated URL that, you know, it's hard to advertise. So before we go on, we had been talking previously about this article, The Never-Ending Federal Surveillance Crime Spree, and I just want to, if you'll bear with me, get through just a couple paragraphs about the FBI crime wave, because, well, we here at Free Talk Live have been victimized by the FBI repeatedly. So FBI officials stress that any violations of Americans' privacy is incidental, since the FBI didn't intend to violate America's rights.
Oh, like when they said, not wittingly, we don't.
Right. And it was a no-fault error, or millions of no-fault errors, with regards to FISA and spying on Americans. There is no chance that police will adopt the same standard for absolving drunk drivers who did not intend to kill anyone they crashed into. Even when media stars such as Tucker Carlson may have been pulled into the 702 mire, that's the law that they're citing, FISA, the system managed to whitewash itself. The FBI's perpetual crime wave created a hornet's nest on Capitol Hill. Representative Andy Biggs asked, how much longer must we watch the FBI brazenly spy on Americans before we strip it of its unchecked authority? Representative Mike Garcia declared, we need...
How long indeed.
Yeah. We need a pound of flesh, said Mike Garcia. We need to know someone has been fired. Well, I think we need to know that the entire thing has been abolished. And so that's where I stand on that. Yes, in fact, I still believe the FBI is the equivalent of the Gestapo in modern times.
And let's look at what's actually happening. So they utterly targeted one of the presidential candidates, and he's building them a new building. So this is about how accountable they are.
Yeah, or aren't.
Yeah, I mean, they, in an absolutely and utterly unprecedented level, they are targeting a former president of the United States, and yeah, they're not going to get punished for that because they're in charge.
Right. Yeah. Remember, when the government does it, it's fine. When you do it, it's a crime. So.
Yeah, and one thing I wanted to note about like the earlier article about these words changing. So there's a real simple fix with this. Use better words. So like, okay, they messed up the word inflation. That's fine. I'm just going to talk about money printing. Now, bear with me. It's a little bit poetic because it's being printed digitally, but it still gets you that idea that there's more dollars than there used to be.
Yep.
So that way you don't get confused about, oh, were you talking about my prices going up? Nope. Just talking about there being more dollars.
I use terminology that makes people look at me funny in my day-to-day life. For example, you know, somebody sees the name printed on, you know, like my debit card when I pay my bill at a restaurant or something like that. And like a savvy wait person will like use whatever name is printed on that to say, oh, thank you, Bob, or whatever it is. Right. And like, you know, nobody calls me that around here. But like I will say things.
It's not your name.
I will. They're like, but it's your name. Right. I'm like, well, it's my slave name. And like I usually get a weird look for that.
Mm.
Right. And the slave name, like they have to think about that for a while. You know, like it doesn't immediately. Some people like they'll laugh. They're like, ah, ha, ha. They think it's a joke or whatever, right? Oh, I
I'm not joking.
You know, that kind of a thing. So, but I've had people like I flew back to Seattle a little more than a year ago to hang out with some old friends, record drums with my friend Steven on one of the songs on my EP, that kind of a thing. And I was hanging out with some people I'd never met before, some friends of his that. You know, he's a new, he had a kid, him and his wife had a kid. And so they're now they're friends with other people with kids, right? Because when you have kids, you befriend other couples. You can have play dates with your kids or whatever, that kind of crap.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hanging out with, I don't know, three or four different families or something. And like somebody is like, you talk funny. but this is simply because I use what I like to call the words of reality, mm-hmm. at least from my perspective.
Yeah.
Right. And so from my perspective, yeah. Things like my given name are my slave name. It's my government name,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, and like I don't like to acknowledge it because, yeah. you know, why should I?
Well, and people will think you're being hyperbolic about that, but like, okay, let's look at what exactly it means to be a slave. Okay, well, it means that number one, you don't get to leave. Number two, you don't get to pick what you're doing. And number three, you don't get paid for what you're doing.
Right.
Now let's see if this applies. And you know, as an addition that's not necessary but helpful to your slavery is when they can, you know, easily sell you to who they want to. So now, as far as that goes, yeah, it's called elections. I get passed on from one leader to the next.
Yeah.
But again, that's helpful but not necessary. But okay, not being allowed to leave. Well, you can't leave without permission. It's this long process called passports. And they can suspend them anytime they feel like.
Right.
So well, you don't get to leave. Hold on, Mark. Let me finish the argument and then let you kill it. Number
right.
two, you don't get to decide what you're doing. And number three, you don't get paid for what you're doing. Taxes. No one has ever wanted to fill out any of these forms. We have to. Or else. And what are the effects of these forms? Well, we don't get paid for some of what we're doing.
Okay, Mark.
Yeah, that sounds accurate. I mean, I've always had a problem with the 13th Amendment saying involuntary servitude, and then I have to fill out these tax forms every year. I mean, how exactly do they, you know, get away with that particular part? But I mean, you know, if I want to be a nuclear physicist, I just have to go to school for it and learn how to do it. And, you know, most of the work that I do is the work that I choose to do. But
So it's a partial enslavement rather than a full enslavement. Mm-hmm. And to that end, if you want to do nuclear physics under a stage name, you can. Yeah. We'll see how the market treats you. Maybe they'll like it. Maybe they won't. You know, you've chosen to do this under a stage name. It's a name that you decided was a good name for you. It wasn't handed to you, wasn't written down and all of that by this entity. So this entity is the part that's responsible for all of the slavery that's put upon you. Whereas the part
my
that
nuclear
you get
physics
picked,
name is Biggie McBangbang.
Nice. Slightly concerning if I want you to build like a nice safe reactor, but you know,
one of the other terms that I use, I used it. You guys, if you're watching us over at watch@freetalklive.com or on our Odyssey channel or on our Twitch channel, I don't know why you want to watch. We got faces for radio, but we do have live video streams at watch.freetalklive.com. So before I come to the studio, I generally stop and I get either a cup of coffee or a cup of tea at one of the local, you know, gas station type convenience store things that are near here. And so, yeah, it was like $2.05 for my tea today. And I don't like putting that small of an amount on like my debit card or, you know, and I'm like, I don't feel like putting on the card here. I'll pay you in murder bucks. And I hand a $5 over to the lady, and I'm digging in my pocket for a nickel, and she, like, looks at me weird, and she goes, murder bucks? I'm like, dollars. And she goes, oh. And, like, that was it. That was the entire – but, like, I used that term out loud, you know, a couple people in line behind me, you know, and it's not the first time I've used that term.
Just planting seeds.
But I'm just like, let's call things what they are.
Yeah.
Right?
Maybe she thought she got him in some kind of bank robbery that went bad.
Right, and like now,
I did, in fact, as did we all.
It went very well for the people who did it, because they are never going to get in trouble.
Well, 50-50. I mean, it did end up with, like, you know, things like us inventing nuclear weapons that could end the whole species. So, you know, trade-offs.
All right, so I want to get to this story from CoinGape.com. Very interesting title for a website. But the reason I want to bring this up is because we've seen this before. A monkey see, monkey do. When one government does one thing, if it works and it's viable for whoever happens to be running for office at that time, then all the other politicians around the world will also create some version of it in order to advance their campaigns and thus get it passed. So the headline is, EU implements ban on unverified self-hosted crypto wallets. So I'll give you guys just a second to stew on that. My first thought is, it's totally unenforceable. How are you going to enforce that?
There is that.
Right? Like these.
My first thought is, what do you mean unverified?
Right. I think they mean not attached to a quote citizen unquote in their database. That's what I think they mean. I've only skimmed this article, so I don't know.
So anonymous, basically.
That's the idea. Mark?
I don't know.
Okay. Crypto wallets ban. The new EU AML laws target anonymous crypto and cash transactions.
Incidentally, European Union anti-money laundering, for those who don't read this all the time.
Thank you. Targets anonymous crypto and cash transactions, prompting swift changes in the digital currency landscape. The EU is or has adopted an effective ban. How can they decide it's been effective before it's been adopted? Anyway, on crypto transactions committed through non-custodial wallets that have not been verified. This measure forms the broader anti-money laundering directives aimed at combating financial crimes. A majority of the European Parliament's leading commission on March 19th approved the decision. And this stand implies a unified stand against anonymous transactions. The regulation targets transactions through self-custody wallets that lack proper identification, encompassing those facilitated by mobile, desktop, or browser applications. The plan is tailored to overcome the gap that enables the anonymous movement of funds, which is a way used to commit crimes. Like,
so I want to.
The dollar's not used to commit crimes every freaking day.
Bloody all of them. Seriously. So I want to kind of demystify this for people who aren't familiar with the technology, okay? So in an ordinary circumstance, you might be spending money on your credit card.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, you have to provide a certain set of information in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So that information is the credit card number, the little number on the back, your expiration date, and maybe if they're really checking their boxes, what address your is attached to it, right? Okay, so,
or a zip code if you're plugging it in online.
Right. So in the same way, you have a similar thing with cryptocurrency, except all of that information is either this really complicated set of numbers and letters, or this what's called a mnemonic, which is a set of 12 or so words in the right order. Now, if you have those 12 or so words in the right order, it's the same idea of having all the information on your credit card in that you can just spend that money. Now, here's where things get a little bit different between the two. Now, with mine, I have this, this seed phrase, as we call it, the 12 words. And because I have that, I can just spend it. Now, with a credit card, if you give this information out, then it has to get verified by this third party. So now the difference between a self-custody or non-custodial wallet, which for the record is the stupidest possible term for this, because your wallet goes in your pocket, which is why it's different from your account.
Right.
So a custodial wallet or account, which would be the actual non-Orwellian phrase for this, is where someone else, say Coinbase, has the 12 words that let him spend all of this money, and they made a promise to you to only do it when you tell them to. So that's the difference right there.
Right. I think the best way to describe it is with a custodial wallet, somebody else has custody of your wallet. And here on Free Talk Live, we say, if they're not your keys, they're not your coins, which is to say, if anyone has custody of your wallet, they have your wallet.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like there's extra terminology in there just because
the Bitcoin was made so that you have control of your money. And then the majority of people who have Bitcoin now give somebody else control of their money. Somebody like Sam Bankman-Fried, who is going to do whatever he wants with your money and did.
Yeah. And it is profoundly ironic that the biggest thing in cryptocurrency nowadays is the very thing that negates the idea, because ETFs being approved means exactly the thing we were trying to avoid with it, with the technology. Like, it's literally like, I invented a car. Ah, I will allow you to release that into the market as soon as you take the wheels off.
Right. Yeah. Cryptocurrency market faces tight EU regulations. The crypto rules raise privacy and use concerns. The cryptocurrency sector has expressed significant concerns over the EU's new regulatory measures. Daniel Lodi Troster, host of the Sound Money Bitcoin podcast, articulated the practical challenges introduced by the legislation. He pointed out the potential for these laws to hinder not only personal financial privacy, but also the broader application of cryptocurrencies within the EU. The emphasis was on the detrimental effects of donations and the general use of digital currencies. Despite the restrictions, it's important to note that self-custody or to self-custody transactions remain outside the scope of the new regulations. Okay, so far we're okay. This distinction indicates a nuanced approach to regulation aiming to curb misuse while not completely stifling the inherent freedoms offered by cryptocurrency networks. The crypto community's response has been mixed, with some acknowledging the necessity of AML laws. They're not my friends. If they're not acknowledging that, they're not my friends.
Right.
And others fearing an overreach that could impact privacy and economic liberty. So,
well, I think that Bitcoin is, to some extent, a victim of its own success. Clearly, for any coin to become successful enough, this was the sort of thing that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the sort of thing we actually talked about way back in the day. We talked about things like this. Now, obviously, in 2011, when we were discussing Bitcoin, we on Free Talk Live imagine that this would somehow other markets would spring up and people would be able to, do ETFs themselves. But instead, the big money guys said, yeah, this is a good technology, and they adopted it themselves. I guess it's not a surprise.
Well, and I think this was just a necessary part of the growing pains of this technology. And yeah, there are things that I don't like about this, but look, the fact of the matter is that this is the only, in my opinion, and I have thought long and hard about this, I don't think there is any other way for a technology like this to scoop up all of the monetary value of the earth, except to go through all of these growing pains where we systematically destroy all of the stupidity in the world's financial system.
That's a tall order.
It sure is. And it could do it. I don't think it'll do it.
Oh, I think it's already doing it. So the thing that made Sam Bankman-Fried different was that he was always going to get caught, because instead of it being on private books, it was on public ledgers. So it was going to happen eventually.
That must be why he was so cavalier about it, because, because he knew he was going down.
Well, and they made the message very, very clear that even if you are the poster child for the current political correctness, that will not protect you.
Right.
And even if you paid off all of the right people, that will not protect you. And even if you are this scion of two great families, that will not protect you, because cryptocurrency is cutting away at the root of the power of government.
Yep.
And anyone who helps that process go along and isn't part of a plan to eventually capture that ability will be taken out.
Well, and to Mark's point about, we talked about what does it look like when, Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency sort of wins, right, or begins winning, right? There's a lot of things to look at. And like right now, there's, of course, a lot of fear. Now, some of it is being propagated by governments, right? They want you to fear cryptocurrency, right? But there's a bunch of fear coming from within the cryptocurrency communities themselves, just because it's human nature to fear the unknown. It's currently unknown what, this whole like ETF thing that's happening with the stock market being able to buy crypto and wrap it and put it into, whatever, your retirement fund and all this kind of crap. Like, there's fear surrounding that because a lot of crypto old schoolers are like, oh my gosh, the government's co-opting the Bitcoin. That's one way to look at it. But you could also look at it the other way.
And when I was a punk rocker, we called it selling out.
Well, you could also look at it the other way, and you could say Bitcoin is fulfilling its prophecy of continuing to vacuum up all of the fiat, and this just happens to be the way that the fiat people made it happen. Mm-hmm. Mind you, Bitcoin did not make this happen.
Right.
Right. Bitcoin, at first, every entity on planet Earth, every bank, every government attacked Bitcoin, tried to bring it down. They tried to unplug it. They tried to figure out who's in charge of it. They, I'm assuming, tried to murder some people to take it, offline, to take it out of circulation.
Hal Finney caught some real hell from the U.S. government for this.
Yeah. And so, time goes on and they figure out, well, all right, it's out there in the wild now. We can't really, what can we do about it? And so they get together with their banker friends and they go, well, maybe we could buy some and then manufacture this third and fourth level in between the Bitcoin and our customers.
Well, and last cycle, what they tried to do was collapse the price of the thing.
Right.
So instead of it having this massive blow off top, they cut it in half so that instead of it going too high, this way it'll stop here and come right back to here. And then when it goes down, they did a bunch of other shenanigans to just shove the price all the way down, the biggest shenanigan of which being the spot futures ETF, which anyone who knows financial stuff knows that a futures market, since you don't have to have the underlying asset, is going to decrease the price of it. And even that was not enough to meaningfully impact this because it's just too powerful at this point.
Yep.
So they've had to retreat to, okay, we can't kill it. We can't kill its price. How do we make sure that we're the only access that people have to it? And that's the game plan now.
Well, but they already can't do that, right? Because Bitcoin was created for everyone to be able to have access to it. right? It's just that for some people who have, you know, I don't know, they've got a financial advisor, they've got, you know, some wealth put into the stock market, whatever. They've got somebody giving them advice about, hey, you know, I think it's a good idea. We put a percentage of your holdings into this. And I think it's a good idea, mm-hmm. too. Yeah. I really do. So, like, is this something to be concerned about? I don't think so, in my opinion, because I think it is just another sign of the same thing happened when, like, Craigslist started vacuuming up all of the want ads from all of the newspapers, killing the newspaper.
Well, it's
this
like,
is just another, it's an attachment on your shop vac, right? Instead of the big, long one, it's now it's a little narrower, and it's only vacuuming up this particular portion.
It's like
portion.
The old story of when they asked Ben Franklin what kind of government they made, and he said, a republic if you can keep it. Mm-hmm. Now, what we have is a universal hard currency if you can keep it. If the people of Earth decide overwhelmingly that they will hand all of this power exclusively to the government, and no one will do what they can obviously get away with very easily, well, that will be one way.
All right. Mark, thank you for joining us. Peakless, thank you for joining us tonight. We are out of time, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening and tuning in. If you missed any part of tonight's program, please find the archives over at freetalklive.com under the resources tab. Thanks and peace.
This is Mark Edge with Free Talk Live. Mark Warden with porcupinerealestate.com is one of the best real estate agents I've ever worked with. I've been through about 24 real estate transactions in my life, and I feel like I know what I'm doing. But there's always the things that you don't know that you don't know. Mark Warden with PorcupineRealEstate.com found a problem with the house that I was buying that ultimately saved me $65,000. He's a consummate professional, holds his people to his own high standards, and I would unequivocally recommend him for any real estate purchase in New Hampshire. Don't sell yourself short. Contact PorcupineRealEstate.com.